Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Will Slabaugh's with Stevens & Company. He's the only one that's tasted Tim Hortons and Dunkin' Donuts. Tim, who makes a better Will, who makes a better cup of coffee?
I'm a little bit more partial to Dunkin' being an American here, but you know the deal looks pretty attractive for the Burger King guys. I think they like
right.
the taste of Tim Hortons.
Let me get to the money question of the moment. I thought the press release literally read like a PR statement in many ways. Do we know what the preferred coupon will be for Mr. Buffett after getting 8% or 9%, whatever it was, on Heinz?
We don't know what that's going to look like. I think just having him on the press release gives a bit of a rubber stamp to the deal. But as far as the details of either the debt or the preferred, we don't know.
What is the strategic value here? Corporate guys hate to talk about tax inversion or even the mathematics of a transaction. They want to talk about the zeitgeist. Give me the PR sanitized zeitgeist right now.
So I think there are a couple things that make sense here. So first of all, 3G Capital is a great allocator of capital and mm-hmm. a great controller of corporate costs. So I think you'll see Tim Hortons, as this company is acquired, become a lot leaner. And I think you'll see that cost base shrunken, which should help out the earnings. And the other side...
How many basis points of SG&A will come out of Mr. Hortons?
Hard to say. Burger King was stripped pretty clean. It's probably the leanest company you'll be able to find out there, with CEOs and the rest of the guys in cubes and a lot of guys sharing printers. So they embrace the lean corporate infrastructure. So tough to say, but a lot,
fair.
I think, is the answer.
Okay. Continue on the zeitgeisty strategy.
Sure. I think the rest of it is going to be you have another global brand to add to a portfolio and be able to take out to your franchisees, which, by the way, these are both nearly fully franchised businesses, so they don't own the company stores. So you take both brands to the respective franchisees of the other company, and you say, hey, here's another growth vehicle. So I think an
right.
international growth platform is another highly attractive piece of the story.
I mean, if I take the income statement for Burger King worldwide, folks working off the Bloomberg here, I mean, I don't think people realize that in the food business, it's not like the grocery store 1 or 2% business. You can make some real margins here, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as a franchise business, the corporate company is going to make very, very high EBITDA margins, north of 50%. So this is a very high-margin business.
I mean, let's be careful here, folks. I think this is an important idea here for the flexibility that Mr. Slabaugh is talking about. These are Apple computer-like margins. The last 12 months, a dollar goes down to the operating income line at a stunning 55 cents. And I understand there's some adjustment. Their net income is you make 25, 26 cents per dollar. Can you do that with donuts and coffee?
Well, yeah, that's just the virtue of the franchise business. So they aren't operating the stores. They're simply getting a royalty rate from the franchisees for operating the stores. So that's just the virtue of them being a franchisor.
Where's the growth here? I still don't get. I mean, I got to be honest with you, folks. We've seen a million transactions. Scarlet Food did a great job breaking those headlines. But, Will, come on, it read like a PR statement.
A little bit, but I do think there is some credence to the idea that you can take this platform and grow it, and I actually expect there would be more transactions down the road similar to this. I don't see why 3G Capital, as doing such a good job with Burger King and turning this
right.
thing around, couldn't attack on some more brands here.
What about tax inversion? Again, folks, Matt Levine's Bloomberg View article from yesterday is must read. It's the clearest discussion ever I've seen on the corporate tax ballet in America. Even Warren Buffett says this is not about taxes. Baloney. Give me the plug-in on how much that tax inversion is worth on this transaction.
So you should have a combined market cap that's going to be somewhere in the, getting up close to $20 billion, $18, $20 billion. And so when you think about the tax rate over time, and where last year both tax rates were in the 27% range, the Ontario corporate tax rate should be roughly 26.5%. For the American tax rate, that should be 35%. So over time, Burger King would work toward that. That being said, so even though it's not a huge difference right now, over time, that should matter. And so from long-term tax planning, that helps out.
Okay, let's work through the math. It's 9 percentage points delta between U.S. and Canada. They're not going to do all that right away. What do you do, split the difference? They make 4 or 5 percentage points?
I think that's probably fair. I think it happens slower than that, but I think that's probably fair.
And it's 5 on what valuation? How do you take that valuation? On gross revenue?
On revenue, right.
So what's gross revenue again?
So we're going to see, I apologize, don't have the numbers in front
sure,
of me.
Sure, fair. Give me a rough number.
So for, I can give you an EBITDA number, probably maybe a little bit better way.
Okay, please.
So on a combined EBITDA, I think you're probably looking at something like $1.6 billion.
Okay, so $1,600 million. So they're going to pick up an $80 million delta, $80 million delta on that tax inversion, right?
Yeah, that's about right.
How can Warren Buffett say this is not about taxes?
I think it's definitely one of the benefits. I think saying it's not about taxes may not be completely accurate. I think that's one of the benefits. But I think there are other benefits as well. So maybe he's just trying to emphasize while taxes do play somewhat of a role, they see this as a global growth platform as well, and then an opportunity for G&A savings.
Come on, Will. I don't even want to know how many pounds this guy weighs. Burger King. Texas Roadhouse, Papa Murphy's, Wendy's, Bravo Brio, Buffalo Wild. Which is your favorite fast food?
Favorite fast food? I have to go Sonic. I'm in the South, and so the Sonic milkshake does it for me.
Why are we apologizing about the phrase fast food? What is it now? Quick something? Quick meal? It's
quick service restaurant.
Quick service.
QSR is the term most used.
What happened? Did fast food become like? You just can't say that?
A little bit in the consumer's mind. So quick service restaurant sort of, hides that fast food mentality
right.
That a lot of people don't like and sort of raises the idea of the quality.
We've got quick questions from Gina Martin Adams. Question yeah. from Mr. Slaybaugh, please.
Nothing quick about strategists, unfortunately. Will, thinking about kind of taking a step back and looking at the restaurant industry group within the S&P 500, it's performed fairly poorly this year. The market's up some 7%. Restaurants as a whole, in the large cap index anyway, up about zero. What's going on with the stocks? Is it just a function of, this is an industry that's not growing as fast as the index this year? Is there so much transition that it's really a stock-specific story that you're focusing on? But what's going on with the industry at large?
Yeah, and to your point, I cover 21 stocks, and 17 of those are down on the year. Most of those down fairly significantly. And what happened was last year was a great year. The stocks outperformed the indexes. This year, as you mentioned, they've been underperforming. But this is a sector that, since the recession, has been putting up negative traffic, meaning fewer guests in the doors year over year, every single year. So this is a sector that's yet to recover. You have a few bright spots out there, mainly in fast casual, but for the most part, the lower and middle income consumers who visit most of these restaurants simply haven't seen job or wage growth.
Well, like, what is Sonic doing? I mean, you love Sonic. I'm looking at their website. They have 50-cent corn dogs. What do they need to do to get the traffic in the door versus Chipotle or the other names?
Well, and Sonic is one of those that's done it well. What they've done is innovate around the menu. They give you a reason to come in the door that you can't get anywhere else, and they give you a good price-value relationship. And so all those things have to exist for a restaurant to thrive right now. And so we see what's happened to McDonald's lately, what's happened to a lot of other restaurants, the Darden's, et cetera. And I think that price-value relationship has been a little bit out of whack.
So then
I'm getting hungry just looking at this. It's just, Gina, help me here while I look at the conies and hot dogs.
While you're distracted by the food. So, Will, if you talk about traffic and value being the big drivers, but yet wages really being the predominant sort of bugaboo for the whole industry at large, if we do get an acceleration in wages, do you think that the consumer sort of goes back to quick service, or would that
good
acceleration
question.
In wages kind of make them jump to something more mid to higher end and kind of ignore quick service? I mean, is this industry going to continue to struggle?
I think that's a good point. So I think it does help quick service, first of all, but I think it probably helps fast casual even more. And so when you think about what's happened to a lot of the quick service traditional players out there, that higher end consumer has been stolen in large part by fast casual. So we're thinking Chipotle, Panera, all the fast growing noodles, a lot of those new fast casual players. So I think a lot of that high margin customer has been leaving a little bit. And so that's why you see someone like a Wendy's trying to position itself as more of a niche, premium QSR, which has been working pretty well for them.
Does Burger King learn anything from Tim Hortons? I mean, every article's got the word M, millennial, in it. I mean, I'm looking, folks, I've never seen this before. I'm a child of the Northeast. The original pretzel dog? It's Sonic? Are you kidding me, Will?
It, if you look at when they launched that, their same-store sales were up 6% in that quarter. So it's something new and different and something you can't get somewhere else, and it was at an attractive price point. So back to the point of let's give the customer a reason to come in the door where they might not have come in before, then there you go. It works.
What's going to work for millennials is everybody tries to – I mean, there's a Chipotle, Will, at the corner of 56th and I'm guessing 6th Avenue. I mean, lines are out the door. It's so popular. Who's going to win the millennial battle?
I think it's going to be a lot of the fast casual guys like Chipotle. Those that are continuing to innovate, offering a message and a corporate culture that people actually can grab onto, and where, you know, that probably didn't matter as much beforehand. Now, whenever Chipotle talks about the way that they try to source their food in a more responsible way, the millennials care about that. And so that may still be a small piece of your base, but it's an increasingly meaningful part of your base. So that's where McDonald's is stepping in now and talking about that a lot right. More, cage-free eggs, et cetera. So that's starting to matter.
Will, 15 seconds, 15 seconds. Your single best buy, please.
Single best buy is Del Frisco's. They're a great brand and one that's exposed to a healthier, higher-end consumer and has a great management team.
Thank you. Will Slabaugh, this has been absolutely fantastic.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.